And now, your local forecast.
You are tuning in to The Forecast. My name is M4Sonic and I'm joined tonight by Chief Street.
Yo, yo.
And a very special guest. Please welcome to The Forecast, Seek and Destroy.
What's up? It's good to have you, man.
I just broke my watch.
Straight away.
There we go. Welcome, mate. Is this your first podcast?
Yeah, this is my first podcast.
Yeah. So. That's exciting. Mm. Well, basically, we just sit on the couch and we chat all things music industry and we wanted to find out a lot about you because I've known you now, I think, 10 years.
Yeah, I think it's about that.
About 10 years. So for those playing at home, Seek and Destroy is a producer, artist, DJ. What genre do you reckon is the main fit?
I think early on it was probably harder electro sort of stuff. Yep. And then that kind of moved into dub and then I think drum and bass is probably the...
Is that what you're making right now?
Thing. Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and probably playing mostly drum and bass now. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I haven't been to a Seek set in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I would
say it's a lot more like sub-focus-y kind of sort of stuff, I guess, I'm pushing it towards now. So,
How's the growth?
no,
what I mean like from one genre to the next. You know, you're like evolving.
Why do you say it like that?
Because, you know, like career growth.
We are thinking about his stuff.
Nah, the beard is what, this is where I remember from the beginning.
I think I've always been into drum and bass. I guess now there's a bit more of a platform for it, especially in Australia.
You reckon?
Yeah, like now it's huge.
Yeah, right. I'm out of touch.
You think it was the Lude remix that kind of kicked it off?
Lude's pushed it in definitely like a good direction where I guess he hasn't commercialized it, but has kind of pushed it in that direction a little bit more. Just made it a lot more heard. Obviously, like the arias, and now you're getting drum and bass tracks in the arias. That's kind of a sign that it's kind of going into that direction, I'd say.
Let's start from the beginning.
Yeah.
What got you into music? Like, where did the journey start for Seek and Destroy?
I think I downloaded Virtual DJ probably about like 20 years ago, I reckon, almost. And then I just made a lot of little mashups and all that sort of stuff. And then that kind of went into me buying my equipment.
How old are you at this age? Like,
I think I would have been like 15, I reckon.
Yeah.
Like 15, 16, I reckon is when that first interest was sparked. And then, I think I saved up enough just doing like e-commerce on eBay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, just sold Dolce & Gabbana jackets.
Real. Side hustle.
On eBay to get enough for decks. And then eventually I got those decks and then started mixing on those and then started getting parties. And then in between that, obviously got Logic Studio and then just got into producing.
I was going to ask you what you use. Because I remember when I came to your studio, you were using Logic.
Like, still haven't changed.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I want to learn Ableton, but I think I've just committed so hard to Logic.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then it's just really hard to change from that because you got all your, especially just all your presets and all that sort of stuff. It's really hard to move that all over to Ableton.
Yeah. Fair. Yeah, if it's not broken, don't fix it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you find it hard to collaborate then with other people? Because like you'd say the majority, well, am I incorrect here, but most people use Ableton, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I'm okay with just stems, but I can use Ableton enough to a level where I guess I can bounce out certain things in Ableton and then putting it into Logic and then bounce it back type thing. Yeah. So I don't think I still really struggle with that, I guess, at the worst case scenario. But I do want to learn it more where I get to be like a pro at Ableton, basically.
Yep.
But it's just, at the moment, I'm still just, I guess, Logic.
No, that's fair. We just made the jump to 11. And like, so Ableton's got a new version 12 coming out soon.
Yeah.
Really annoying because I literally just like finalized my template for Ableton like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then I saw 12. I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah. So, and I haven't even made the commitment to 11. I'm still in 10. So, cool.
I'm on Logic 9 and there's Logic X, which has been out for about 4 years.
Yeah,
still haven't made the jump. But
again,
when you
like,
make the jump, same. I think there's a bunch of programs and all that sort of stuff that don't make the jump as well. So my biggest worry is that when I update, then there's like 20 other things to update.
Yeah.
And then it's just don't know, a mess.
Well, I was pissed. I went up to 11, right? Which is 64-bit. I don't know what Logic is.
Yeah.
But I had 32-bit Ableton before. So all my plugins were 32-bit.
I think it's 32, yeah.
Most upgraded. Most were fine. You could just download the 64-bit versions. Yeah. But there were heaps that didn't.
Yeah. I think Logic has the same thing where it's there's a bunch. I think it might have now with an update where it can do both. But I know when it initially came out, it could only do one.
Yep.
So that, and that just basically got rid of most of the VSTs basically. I had, I was just like, well, I don't want to deal with that. Mm-hmm. So I won't update anything. Mm-hmm. And now I can't get even Splice working because my whole computer hasn't been updated.
Oh, dude.
So it's a mess. Is at the
working
moment.
Off sample packs?
Yeah, I'm using very old school technology basically. So.
Shout out Apple. Time to get Seek a new computer, please.
So Logic is native like Apple software, right?
Yeah.
Because I've always wondered, like, I feel like learning Logic would be difficult.
Yeah.
Because it's not so common, right? If you want an Ableton tutorials and there's like all the courses that run here in Adelaide are like very Ableton based.
Yeah.
Whereas Logic, like how did you decide and learn Logic? Was it all just self-taught? Well,
going back with before though, with Logic, all the new, what's it called? The OSTs.
Mm.
All the new ones don't run Logic 9.
Okay.
So if you update your computer at all, then you can't go back to that previous model. You have to use Logic Pro X.
Yep.
So that's where it's kind of halted a lot of stuff. I guess I'm worried about jumping to that.
Yep.
And then I lose all this sort of stuff and everything's all different. Like,
yeah.
They changed a lot of stuff. So it's probably like me having to learn for about a fortnight just all the new stuff because it's compression and all that. It's so different in 9 than it is in X, and it's kind of just learning little bits and pieces to do with that. But I guess experimenting will just...
It's just like the... I don't know if you guys are all on iPhone, but they just did the iOS update like a couple of nights ago. Everything looks different.
Yeah.
I'm pissed.
Yeah. Really? I haven't seen it.
Well, it's the same sort of thing with like, the Logix. It's just like, it's a whole different thing.
Well, Ableton has just stayed ugly.
Yeah, which is good though, but you want it to stay the same. Like when there's change, that's when it feels awkward when you work in
them. 100%. So,
you're like stuck basically.
I am, and I'm going to have to eventually make that jump and just update everything. Dude, but what's going to be is just...
Go to Ableton.
No.
Because if you're going to spend the time like redoing everything on Logic, you could, I don't know. I'm not here to preach the book of Ableton. you must.
I think I'll eventually just, like I said, do both and have a bit more of a play on Ableton. I kind of want to learn Ableton probably from someone like you or like another producer just so that I can almost like fast track it, I guess.
Sure.
Rather than me just sit and watch YouTube videos for hours.
Let's make a tune.
That's the easiest
way. Done. Drum and bass, here we come. Luke's fist bumping off camera. All right. So let's fast forward a bit. You're starting to pick up some traction, I guess. Is that from SoundCloud or is that from just being like a resident DJ or what? Where did you find that people were really starting to like band around your music and get amongst it?
I think back in the day, SoundCloud was probably like the breakthrough, I guess.
Yep.
Because I guess like I kind of mingled with a few artists on there. I think Kai Watchi was one of like first guys and all that. But just the Cannonballen Records guys and all that. Mm. I think they just kind of got onto my stuff pretty early.
Did they find it or did you reach out?
I think they found it. Like I'm just trying to think. Like one of the first remixes I made, I think it was just a heavier remix. And there was someone, it wasn't G-Tronic, but it was someone that was like G-Tronic back in the
name
day.
Name I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah. Hazer. I think played one of my tracks and he put it into one of his mixes. And I think that's where they got around something or something like that, something weird like that. And then, just pretty much they just got me on a couple of remixes and those remixes did well. And then I would send an original and they got around that usually a lot of the time.
I love that. You actually genuinely went via music.
Yeah.
Which is
cool.
So one of the big topics of this podcast is we're kind of analyzing where I think the music industry is kind of falling to shit.
Yeah.
It's a really good time for the music industry right now because like the point of entry is really accessible for everybody, right? If you've got a phone, you can start a TikTok or an Instagram, whatever.
Yep.
But it's just so oversaturated with bullshit and people are basically chasing this bullshit metrics game Yeah. That is completely false anyway. Not that they know that at the time, but they're all going about it, I think, in particular, like running this studio, we get a lot of young kids come through and they're all just like, oh, I've got to do this so that, you know, my TikTok blows up so that a label comes and signs me. Like, yeah, okay. Yeah. But it sounds like from when we started, the old school method was music number one. Like you've gone and made a remix of someone's track and then use that to get in touch with that artist or that label. And then they've sort of supported you. And then they're like, hey, I want to hear your originals. And then all of a sudden they're like, there's validity in like the quality of how good you are as a producer.
Yeah.
That's why you're getting the opportunity.
I think the biggest problem at the moment is just the market is so oversaturated and, and there is like a lot of people that are really good producers now.
Yeah,
that's where it's like harder, I guess. Like back then, I feel like there was a lot more of an opening and kind of, I guess like there was originality a lot more back then as well too, because now, because it's so oversaturated, that originality becomes less and less.
We're going
because
backwards.
Because there's a bigger and bigger market sort of
like
thing.
Even David Guetta's like doing bootlegs of 90s hits.
Yeah, yeah. I think with that, it's I guess they're now just going to familiarity.
It's a hard word. It's a word. Well,
then it comes back to the lewd stuff though, right? Yeah. Like the biggest track he had was a remix or a bootleg or whatever, the Down Under remix.
Yeah.
And I find a lot with drum and bass as well. Like drum and bass is such a easy genre to remix into, right?
Yeah.
Just put a drum and bass beat and make it faster.
It's almost became like, I guess minimal was one of these things back in the day
where
people would just do that and then they would have the chords of the track or the bass line of the track and then just chuck that in. I guess with a lot of drum and bass remixes at the moment, they're kind of just doing that. And I don't know, it goes down well, but obviously like you can kind of see the difference between that and then someone like Lewd or someone that's kind of doing a little bit more, like Sub Focus would probably be a prime example. I guess Lewd is kind of doing more just the normal kind of remixes, but is adding his little bit of flavor on it to it. But there are so many, I guess, upcoming D&B guys that are just kind of doing those kind of almost minimal kind of remixes where it's just that, put a bass line, put the vocal in, and then drum, bass, drums. And it does sound okay, but yeah, I guess like those guys, I know they'll kind of get big to some degree, but I don't think they'll get to the point of like Sub Focus or like Friction or any of those kind of guys, which are actually like doing cool stuff.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Headaches, another good example is where there's just originality still in that.
Yep. So another thing I want to discuss is you guys in particular did a remix for DJ Snake. Is that right?
No, it was Boombox.
We did it for Boombox. Yeah.
Sorry, and then DJ Snake played the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, yeah.
There's quite a few. Like Shaq played it.
Yeah,
like,
that was Tomorrowland.
Which was sick.
Main stage.
Yeah.
Right, so that was Boombox track. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. So
I thought it was DJ Snake.
You know what? Just to bring it back, it was funny because the way you were talking about how you got on Cannibalen reminded me on how I got on Boombox's label, which was through that remix.
Yeah.
And then you send more music and then the relationship starts. And then you send original music and then they dig that and then they signed a song of mine.
Yeah.
Very similar. I just thought
so
that was kind of
like music.
Yeah, via the tune. But so I remember we had tried to do things before, I think. I was on Ableton, he was on Logic.
Yeah.
I remember I started it on Ableton.
Yep.
I reckon you came over to my house as well.
Yeah, we kind of just
and then we flipped it to
your
computer. So I did most of the build ups and stuff and like structure wise. And then he just made the most ripper of a drop. I remember just like hearing it for the first time, be like, oh my fucking God.
Well, I discovered pretty well you guys through your music.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just still remember seeing DJ Snake play that too.
Yeah.
Just stupid amount of people.
Yeah. It was
flamethrowers going nuts.
Yeah.
And he's cool as fuck with his glasses and he's just throwing his hands around.
Yeah.
But he went on to play that at every one of his main stages
for like
3 years, I reckon. Yeah. Like it was rinsed.
Yeah, yeah.
Loved
well
it.
Done.
Yeah, it was great, man. I mean, that fucking gave me the biggest step in.
Like, I was going to say, what did it do for you guys?
Everything.
Yeah.
Me. I think like, I built so many relationships and got a lot of eyes on me from that remix. And if it wasn't for that, I don't think, that was a big, massive break for me. So
what made you guys want to do that remix?
It's probably just like, a hot track at the moment.
Yeah.
At the time.
I think, we just wanted to do something. And I think like going down the remix route is probably better than starting an original sometimes.
Yeah.
And you just get, I don't know, cool ideas, I guess. And like that's what that kind of wrote itself, I guess.
So is that some advice you'd give to like young guns aspiring? Like
I do remixes over, like, even if you turn a remix into an original, yep. I think that's how I usually start a lot of my originals, is it starts off as a remix and then I end up like doing so much on it that it doesn't sound anything like the actual song. And I'm like, why don't I just make this an original?
Well, basically, the term remix is so wrong. I remember Deadmau5 was calling it out for being a stupid term, because like a remix originally was you'd take the master stems, right? And you'd change the level, the mix level. Yeah. That was a remix. You weren't you weren't adding production.
It was literally remixing the song.
Mix and master, almost. Correct. I agree.
Yeah. And you might make it an extended play, but you're still using the original stems. Now, a remix is like, I remember when I first got my first like golden official remix, I only used the acapella.
Yeah.
And then just completely reproduced everything underneath.
Yeah.
It was like a remake.
Yeah.
But it's called a remix. And then a lot of people call remixes what they're actually an unofficial remix.
Yeah.
It's a bootleg.
Yeah.
Which is what ours was.
And then it turned, but it turned into an official.
No,
it really? didn't. It would have been sick if it ended up.
Why?
It just got label, smashed.
Yeah, but the label should have jumped on that.
I think they, at the time we released ours, I think they already had like a 5-person remix.
But yours was the best.
Well,
other remixes for it? I can't even remember.
They ended up releasing remixes.
Bro, and we weren't on that shit.
Yeah. They ended up releasing it, but they released it around a similar time that we released that. And I reckon, maybe it was just like a bit of a weird sitch with that. But I know that ours probably got the most light out of everything.
Dude, Boombox opened, as well too. Opened one of his shows with it. Yeah. Like he had one of his big shows and our remix was the first track he played.
So, all right.
Crazy.
Did you leverage that to get bigger opportunities or?
I think Alex did.
I probably benefited the most because you were already established. Yeah. And for me, it was a step in, right? Yeah. So I think I got all the eyes and opportunities from it.
Because I think prior to that, like I had Joyride playing on Rap Stars, which is one of my tracks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And he was smashing that out at every festival. And then there was like kind of little bits and pieces of other stuff that were kind of getting played at festivals as well too. So to me, it was kind of just, I guess, a continuous kind of thing. But that one did really, really well.
Yep. Unexpectedly.
Yeah.
All right. So talk to me about after that. Like where are things heading for Seek and Destroy? So you guys have just had a massive remix. It's doing the rounds. You're getting massive support from like the top 10 DJs in the world.
Yeah. What year do you reckon that was? That was like…
Seven or eight, maybe.
17
or 18.
Yeah, that sounds about
right. I reckon.
Yeah.
I reckon 17 or 18. It probably would have been. I think I was working on a lot of originals. It was kind of straight after that. I remember Snake hit up both of us as well too.
What?
Dude, I would DM him. He was like, dude, I can't believe you're playing this track still. And he's like, yeah, I love it. Okay, man.
He was super keen.
Was there an opportunity for either of you to collaborate with DJ Snake?
I didn't have the opportunity to collaborate, but he just wanted a lot of tracks and all that. And the worst thing is that I didn't end up, I think my biggest worry is I'm a perfectionist when it comes to music and I wasn't happy with a few things and didn't get them done. And then I guess over time that interest got lost and it would have been like a 6-month, 7-month period. And I think I was still touring at the time and stuff. And I was like, when I get back, I'll make sure I finish this stuff. And then a bunch of other stuff happened and it was just really hard to send over stuff.
Do you think you could still?
It was on Twitter, like, and I don't even know. I probably haven't used Twitter for a couple of years.
Who uses?
So
Twitter?
I might just.
Oh, like you were contacting him through Twitter.
Well, yeah, he was messaging me on Twitter. I remember. I was out literally, I think at EC one night, and it was at 2:00, and he's like, "Where's this track?"
Yeah,
and I was just, and I saw the notifications come up, and I just showed my mate, and he was just like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I definitely didn't take the most out of the opportunity there. I feel like I think about that a lot where I'm just like, I should have just sent this stuff even if it was half finished and all that. There is a couple of tracks now where I would be like, I think he'd still probably get around this sort of stuff.
Right.
I think it's all stayed relevant, but just, I guess to me, the worst thing is finding the time to actually finish that stuff now.
I've got a challenge for you.
Yes.
I've got a challenge for you. I want you to reach out to DJ Snake.
Yeah, see if he...
And then we're going to get you back on this show. We're going to find out how it goes.
All right, easy.
Because like, I mean, dude, I'm talking to myself here and I just see Luke just off camera being like, this fucking guy. I have roadblocked my career massively.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like the first people to give me the biggest opportunities. I joined their team, I joined their management, I joined publishing, I joined all that sort of stuff. And then it just wasn't a good fit for me because I was too headstrong at the time and had so many other needs as an artist that was demanding too much time based on how small fry I was at the time. Long story short, I left those people. But the producers, the ones that really gave me the first leg up, I just feel like I've shut the door.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, what you're saying, it was 6 months. Well, I mean, this was like, it's 10 years ago. How do you reopen that door? And I'm like, well, I'll reopen it once I'm ready and I've got something that I think is so fucking good that they're not going to say no to, because I'm like, if they say no to this, that the fear of rejection is almost like stopping me.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you kind of feel the same way, or is it just like you won't read the message?
I think like I'm at the point now where I'm kind of leaning towards the direction where I'm like, I need to just start finishing stuff and sending it off, regardless of if it's perfect in my head.
Sure.
Just because I'm just going to sit here and not really release anything if I kind of stay in that frame of mind where I'm like, I need this to be perfect before I put it out.
Yep.
Because I guess no track is ever completely finished, I think, in anyone's head. And you could honestly just stay on a track forever and keep on adding stuff again and again and again. It gets to this crazy point rather than just, if you just go, look, I'm happy with it where it is. I'm not ecstatic about it, but I'll just put it out, see how it's received, and then I can work on something else and gradually get better with each track anyway.
Love that.
And then if you do get collaborations, then you pick up stuff from them and then I think you gradually build that. I think that's where I'm kind of leaning towards now.
Well done. I've put out tracks. I'm like, this is perfect. I listened to it the other day. Ah, that's shit.
Yeah.
Just got to put it out. Dude, I got a quick story. I played one of Seek's tunes called Party Animal. You remember that?
Oh, I do.
Yeah, the one that, I never that,
released yeah,
that.
So. Dude, yeah. I was literally about to say, I fucking bugged you for years too.
Fucking good. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, you overworked it because I heard a new version of it like ages later and I was like, what happened?
There was the first version was like very Avram Risk kind of
the
vibes.
One that was on Facebook. Was
the one that was on Facebook and you did the
Avram Risk ones. Yeah. And it was the teddy bears.
I played that. Did I show you the footage? I played it at Dreamville.
No, but so, like I didn't.
Oh, dude, I tagged you on Facebook. All right, well, so to go back in time, I played the American version of Tomorrowland in Georgia, Atlanta. It's called Tomorrow World.
Yeah.
And they have, it's like exactly the same as Tomorrowland. They have the Dreamville opening night where like everyone goes.
Yeah.
And I got to play, I think like third or fourth to last or something.
Yeah.
It was like, it was a good spot.
Yeah.
And I played Party Animals. Is it Party Animal or Party Animals?
Yeah, it's Party Animals, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Went off.
I remember I sent it to you like ages ago.
I loved it. So I think as soon as I saw it on Facebook with the cartoon you did, I messaged you, dude. Like,
I could so easily just find the old project somewhere.
We challenge you.
See if I can just revamp it a little bit.
I've got two challenges for you. Number one, reach out to DJ Snake.
Yeah.
Number two, please. Fucking hell, release Party Animal. It was so fucking good.
You know why? You know it was so fucking good? Because I'm sitting here with the same feelings and remember the exact track, the exact video. It was like, I know it was on Facebook out of all fucking platforms that it was popular on.
Yeah.
With like a horizontal video, you know, like that's how long
it was the Adventure Time.
And it was incredible. Yeah. Everything was to the party scene was to time of the music.
It was a party teddies. Yeah.
And okay, so can that actually go out? Because to like that's still one of my favorite tracks.
I think that the only issue with it now is because like I did have a vocalist.
Yeah.
Like he's this Jamaican vocalist.
Did you get clearance?
I bought the vocals, but like I guess the only thing with it now is releasing it so far.
Do you think it's dated?
I don't know.
All right, we've got an expert back here who runs publishing and record label. All you need to do, correct me if I'm wrong here, Luke, is have you still got a contact with this guy?
Yeah. It'll be a really old email. I don't know what he's talking about. Eight years. Hey, I'm going to release the track. Like,
finally.
Do you want
started
billing?
8 years.
Did you?
I'll give you publishing credit and then it's going out.
Were you saying that, did you think the track was dated in its, as in like the production or was there an issue with the vocal?
I was never completely happy with it, like to a perfect level. Yeah. And then I ended up.
Slammed. It was so good.
There was an artist that I ended up collabing with not long after on that track.
But it changed.
And then it changed.
Oh, yes. And I remember
he's a good
this
artist
too.
As well too.
Yeah.
And he was doing like heaps at the time. I can't think right now, but he was in Dim Mac. And I was thinking, I guess in my head, I was like,
yeah, I get it.
Okay, like we can collab on this. If it changes a little bit. He was very clean with his production.
Yep.
To me, I did still like the new version. It didn't have that, I guess, heaviness, coolness
yeah.
to it.
Yeah.
That kind of got like killed a little bit, but like it was cleaner and neater in my head. Like the production of it was just.
I think the essence of the original got lost.
Yeah, yeah.
You can
yeah.
be a like really good technician and not make people feel.
Yeah. I think the weird thing is, I guess maybe that's where I'm struggling with now is I'm getting a lot more about the technical side of stuff and I'm getting lesser about
fun,
the cool, fun stuff. And I reckon that's where I need to get back in the frame of mind I was when I was like kind of on Cannibalin and kind of just in that killing it period.
Well, let's get sort of closer to where we're at now. So let's fast forward again. I mean, 8 years is a long time to fast forward, but what's the trajectory for you now? Like, are you still touring? Are you still making music? What's the deal?
I haven't toured since COVID,
mm-hmm.
But I want to get back touring,
mm-hmm.
And I want to start releasing a lot more. I don't think I ever released like a full EP, so I think I always just did singles and remixes and all that sort of stuff. So I want to get a full EP out ASAP. And also with a side project as well too, is I want to kind of release through both, so I can kind of be hitting two different areas at the same time.
Okay,
I've obviously got Seek and Destroy.
Yep,
but I've also got a thing called Bruxton, and that's more like techno-y sort of stuff.
We'll add a link.
House.
Yep.
House
music. Okay.
With that, I do want to start pushing that as well too, because I guess my interest in my head as well too musically, I've had a lot more interest for techno. I guess over the past few years, I did always like it, but I guess over the past few years, it's just been like, I love this.
Why not have Seek and Destroy make techno music?
Because like you still need to split them apart. It's two very different styles. Like, I don't know, Skrillex is probably the only artist I think that's ever been able to kind of like have techno-y sort of stuff and then dub and then DMB and all that sort of stuff.
Why do you think he's allowed to? Is it just because of his mass fame or is it just because he just backs himself?
I think the major thing with it, and I've always kind of thought about this, is that you kind of still have to have like, I guess, a style that's certain with your name. Because if someone gets you on a remix or something like that, if they were to go, hey, I'm going to get a Seek and Destroy remix, I feel like they'd expect a dub or a DMB or hard electro kind of remix. If I'm kind of pushing out that techno sort of stuff through Seek, then it kind of, I guess, blurs that kind of line and then they don't really know if they're going to get this type of remix or this type of remix as well. And then I guess just people that are interested in you, I kind of get a little bit confused as well too. I feel like you need to kind of set the two aside. Otherwise, it might kind of handicap you in a little bit of a way, because I feel like then you're just trying to make something that sounds more like this or something that sounds more like this. When if you split them completely, then you can go, I can really do anything in the techno field through this name.
Mm.
I can do anything in the heavier field through this name.
My only fear with that is that I can't keep up one social media account, let alone two.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That's just a personal thing for me is that
challenge.
I don't know. Yeah.
Challenge three.
Challenge three, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think all of us sitting here are struggling at that. Yeah.
I make everything jack of all trades, master of none. And I don't know, I'm kind of following my nose. It's like, oh, I'm really loving Froggy House right now. So I'll make that. And then, you know, all right, I'll get a launch pad out and I'll make a hard electro, whatever. And like same deal, if someone reaches out for a remix, they didn't care about the musicality. They just wanted a gimmicky launch pad video. And I'm like, nah, I'm not feeling it at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think I let a few people down where they're like, all right, this is an interesting interpretation of a remix. Yeah. This is not a launch pad song.
Yeah.
So I totally get it. But this is one of the biggest things I've struggled with. And I've spoken off camera to Luke a bunch of times, like, oh, I'm loving pop music and I'm writing all this pop music with this songwriter. What should we do? And we're just ghosting it out now.
Yeah.
Like someone else can have it, hopefully. But I'm like, oh, I really love that song. I'd love to have my name associated with that.
Yeah.
It's a conundrum.
I feel like with Infosonic, obviously, like I feel like you've kind of created this broad sort of name where you can kind of have like a field of where you can release prog house and main room and harder electro and all that sort of stuff. But I think if you were to release like a random, I don't know, metal dubstep track or something like that, that would be different sort of thing. But with me, I guess metal and all that sort of stuff was very much like a thing of Sieg.
Yeah. Yep.
To release like a techno song that's got like, I don't know, kind of like Green Velvet kind of vocals and all that sort of stuff, it would be very left of center for the Seek and Destroy name. And that's where I guess like it has to be kind of split in a bit of a way.
Yeah.
And I guess, like I said, it gives me freedom within those two names to not restrict myself where it has to sound like one or the other type thing. Because you still need your style at the end of the day.
Sure.
Because if you don't have that style, then you're basically just making anything, I guess.
I understand what you're saying because like techno is very far away from bass music.
It's very far away, yeah.
And it could throw off people.
Yeah. Also, it would be nice to be at a festival and play a techno set.
Ooh, he wants the double bass, booking.
So, yeah.
Oh, sorry, I can't play main stage. I've already been booked for the second stage.
Yeah.
Double income, mate.
Yeah. No, I think it would be sick just playing like at a festival, just two different stages would be like a vibe.
Yeah, that's unreal.
Two different vibes.
Goals.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay. And so you haven't toured. And
yeah, since
can you
COVID.
Talk to me about, yeah, man, like I was literally on the last flight home from Southeast Asia when the border shut.
Yeah.
And I have not played since.
Yeah.
And it kills me.
Yeah. Before that, I think like I had Asia a year or two before that where I played in China and then I played like Bali and
dude,
I played in America.
How different is China?
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool though. Cool.
I was there like a month ago.
Yeah. I was telling Chief. Played at a couple of venues and I was like, why are there tables and booths like on the dance floor?
Had that kind of VIP kind of vibe.
Yeah. They party hard. They just get up on the table and they just rock it out.
Yeah.
But it's very different from a nightclub in like the States where it's like, this is where you dance and then you go out there if you want to be a VIP. It was just like, no, VIPs are front and center. Very deep. Did you have to change your style slightly? Because I played hard style sets, which...
Well, mine in Shanghai was a festival.
I
forgot what it was called.
Yep.
I think it was Dreamland or something like that. Right. So similar, that kind of vibe. But with that, it was just a festival, so I could just play whatever I wanted.
Nice. Clubs are hard.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, you will play this and we will sell lots of drinks.
Yeah.
So,
So you just kind of restrict it a little bit sort of thing.
It's a different vibe.
Yeah.
Had a great time, but it was just...
Yeah.
I'm not a hard style producer, so I was just playing everybody else's songs.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm doing a very good job here, but did Peroxide Blonde Hair. Just like so out of my comfort zone. Yeah. What do you see happening with Seek and Destroy in 2024? Like what is like an era back in time, like maybe when like you guys did the remix together, is there like an era that you want to get back to or... Are you making music full-time at the moment or is it part-time or not as often as you like? Where are you at?
At the moment, it's obviously part-time. Like I think since COVID, it was a bit of like a shock, I guess, because previous to COVID, I just did it full-time.
Yep.
And then COVID obviously changed everything around and that's where I had to kind of go back to normal work. And I'm doing graphic design and marketing and all that.
Nice. So
I guess
still in like creative stuff.
Yeah. So it's still being creative and I guess it's still within like... where I can kind of flex those skills that I've picked up from that. But yeah, I 2024, I obviously want to get back touring. Like that's been like a big thing. Even just this year, I'm like, I need to start touring. Yeah. I miss it.
Yeah, man.
And
sure.
Like, I feel like, I don't know, I'm just being in the job that I'm in now sort of thing. I guess like I'm struggling with that, not having that outlet that I had with music and especially with touring and just meeting people and going to shows and like playing music to people. I don't know. There was just something about that I love. And like, obviously the reason why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Playing your own music to people. It's just, I don't know, like can't beat it really. Yeah. So yeah, I guess like that's the big goal for 2024 is doing that, releasing an EP, releasing a lot more music, and then obviously getting both names to a decent level where I am playing festivals. Close to the summer season.
Okay. Yep.
Do you think locally, like there's just a bit of a hole for us at the moment where there's just, unfortunately, we're not lucky enough to have a lot of opportunity.
I think Adelaide's a weird one. Yeah. Like Adelaide's always been a kind of weird one. And I think like the worst thing is I remember when I was in like LA, I think I probably worked on the most music when I was in LA. I think that would have been like around that 17 period as well too. Because it's such a music hub and everyone's kind of, I don't know, passionate about it and like
chasing something.
Yeah. All chasing kind of like a similar dream. You have like kind of this shared kind of hustle in a bit of a way there. And just everyone's, I don't know, like you go to parties and you're mingling with people that like Getter and all that sort of stuff.
What happened
like,
to Getter?
Still around.
He's still doing,
he's doing his side project, more, right?
Yeah.
Terry Reed.
Yeah.
He does what he wants.
But like, yeah, just when I was there, we were just like mingling and there were, you'd meet about like 10 artists that you've kind of played music of over the past couple of years. And this would be literally in 1 week of being in like LA. And then I feel like you just, onto your Logic and you'd just be able to write something straight away. You're just listening to their music and that's kind of inspiring you and you're kind of feeding off of that.
Yeah.
And you're feeding off the energy of everyone else being excited about stuff. When in Adelaide, you don't have that energy to feed off of. You just kind of got this, I don't know, streamlined, like just real flat line, I guess.
Well, we're trying to change it. So the pandemic, same deal, like lost all my income.
Yeah.
And not like I don't do this for the money, but like I had nothing coming in. So it was like, ooh, shit.
Yeah.
Literally sold my car, man.
Yeah.
Like, and then we built this place. And again, like the business that was the main occupant in this premises, they went under because they weren't getting any work. And I just had to make a make or break decision. Like, all right, am I going to become a service provider? And the only skill set I know I have, which is audio, which now progressed into video as well. And I love it. Don't get me wrong. But like when I think like social media has been so bad for my headspace. When I'm like looking at artists that are doing the things that I used to do and that I aspire to still do.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, shit, you know, like it can, you know, you can, your internal monologue can be a little bit harsh, can be a little bit critical, you know?
I think the one thing though that it's made stand out is just how much we care about music and the passion that's there sort of thing. As in it's made me realize how important this actually is because had that year or 2 years where we weren't traveling and we weren't touring and like we weren't
changed doing these things.
And I think in my head, I'm like, that is a huge part of me. And it's made me realize like that because I guess back in the day, like there was certain times, like I guess even leading up to that where I was kind of like, I love music. Like I'm a little bit over touring at times and all that because it was just like being in airports and those kind of like, exchange overs and all that sort of stuff where I was just like, it's killing my vibe a little bit.
Yep.
But then the second COVID happened, I was just like, fuck, I miss this so
much. Yeah, yeah.
And like, especially now I'm trying to like hustle hard to get back to that. And yeah, I think it maybe just makes you realize what's important to you. Like something so drastic like COVID happening, you're just like, fuck, like that's a huge part of me.
Well, we're trying to create a little mini Hollywood here just so I feel like, even though LA's, I mean, it's accessible again, but we had to get super local. So, you know, when you walked into the studio before and you're like, whoa, it's so dark in here. I'm like, well, you know, the only times I get to make music is like during the day now. So I make it feel like nighttime all the time.
Yeah.
Kind of like Las Vegas. You don't know what time of day it is when you're in the casino. And then, yeah, I've basically tried to take all the things that I loved about LA and bring it to Adelaide.
Yeah.
But like you said, there's like an energy and a vibe there. And what I would love to do is like a handful of us go rent an Airbnb in the States for like however long we can.
Yeah.
And just go out. Like,
that'd be sick.
I remember Luke and I went out one night for a studio session or something. I think we got sushi and we're like, let's go to, it was like a space yacht or something. And
Space
yacht. We bumped into bloody Slushy and it was rumored that Marshmallow was around somewhere or something. And Motez of all people from Adelaide was playing that night. And we're like, what the hell? So we went along to that. On a Tuesday night.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Like, you know, we wait in Adelaide for like the Saturday night.
I was going to say, it's like unheard of here, like weekday kind of events. And if there is a weekday event, it usually struggles.
Yeah.
Massively. Yeah.
Well, that would pay me out because I think Luke went to some festival during the week or something. Well, you played, was the Vans.
Vans Warped Tour.
Yeah, and you were like, oh, we yeah. played on a Tuesday. I was so like, a fucking sick. Tuesday?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, Tuesdays exist overseas.
Yeah, overseas, they're just bigger population and the culture's different.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just so different. I mean, you know, Hollywood being like the entertainment capital, it's weird if you're not partaking in that.
Yeah.
You know, in Adelaide, I'm sure you guys have had that conversation where you've, you know, it's the first time meeting your partner's family or you've, or even just your own family's Christmas or something and you're sitting down and, oh, what have, you know, what have you been up to and, or what's your day job and what are you doing? You're like, what do I do? Do I just sort of like play it down? Like, oh yeah, yeah.
Weird robot noises.
Yeah. Like for the longest time, I was just like, oh, I'm a songwriter.
Yeah.
Like, oh, do you sing? Like, nah, don't sing. I make music. Oh, okay. So you play guitar? Nah. Don't play guitar. I use this grid control. Oh, you've lost me. Here's Frank. He's a doctor. You know, it's like, fuck, you know, like.
Yeah. I feel like there's always a misunderstanding with family, like, especially. Yeah.
Oh, you're a music producer. Are you also a drug addict? You know, like, it's, oh, no, I, like, oh, he's just a DJ. One day you'll get a real job. You know, it's like, no,
yeah,
this is,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you can stigma. Be painted. Yeah, there's a stigma and you can be painted with, you know, that brush, but like, I asked you off camera, like, oh, do I introduce you as a DJ, a producer? Like, no, you're an artist. Like,
yeah.
You're a fucking artist. And yeah. And that's where I think a lot of people don't get it. It's like, we are passionate about making music, which is a privilege. You know, we are, I guess, given a gift where we can create this thing that people fucking vibe off and it changes other people's lives and it motivates them, whatever. I think that is as important as, you know, frontline workers in some respects. I'm not saying that we're like… Mm. Going to save lives and shit, but in some form, I think we probably have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a massive part of culture, you know, like music.
Yeah. Yeah, massively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was listening to some of your music on the way here and I think it was Maiden popped up.
Hell yeah, no shit.
Dude,
yeah.
Banger. Did you find that sample in that song or was that Itchy?
That was Itchy because that was like a old Ukrainian folk song.
Dude, I remember digging through the crates being like, where? I think it was almost before Shazam. Or unknown Shazam times anyway. And I was like, where have you found this? It's the most epic, like little vocal.
I think for him, he had heard it in his childhood or something like that. And then he ended up finding, I don't know, some sort of vocal version of it, the one that we ended up releasing with. And I think that was cleared. I hope it was cleared. but yeah, it was some sort of random Ukrainian folk song.
How did you go collaborating with him? Because like he's on the other side of the world, right?
He's from Russia. So like that was kind of hard. But it was just stems, like I was saying before.
Yep.
And we just bounced back stems like several times. And there were certain things that I just kind of, I guess, fixed of his. And then he did kind of the same. And then we just kind of did a drop each basically. And then just finished it. Like, and yeah, to me, I do really like that song. Like it was a really cool song. But yeah, that kind of just came together really randomly. I think he randomly sent me something prior to that. And I really liked it, but I don't think it was in the direction that I was kind of going in. And then he sent me like a little snapshot, I guess, of that tune. And I was like, I do really like the vocals and all this. I'm like, this would be really cool to work on. And yeah, then just sent me the stems literally a day after. And then I think we finished that pretty quickly. I don't think I held on to that for too long, which is good. I think certain other tracks where I've just held on to them for like.
I say there's a lesson in that, right?
Too long. Yeah.
Just like,
yeah, I think just
put it out, wash your hands, and move on to the next one.
I think, yeah, I'm probably going to get to a point where I'm just going to say, I need to finish it within 2 months. If I don't finish it within 2 months, then I just delete it.
Right?
That I don't stick.
Well, kind of to add on to the conversation we were having before, it gives you the opportunity to move on to something new.
Yeah.
That's where you'll find the next idea and the next inspiration to actually like kickstart you off again. I find, you know, when you get back to opening the same project over and over and over again, it's not as enjoyable as it is those first few times.
I think I've always put it like this way is that if you're doing like a painting, if you do that painting in like 8 different sessions, then the painting is going to look a bit obscure or abstract in a bit of a way. When if you do that in like 1 or 2 sessions, then it's going to be pieced together quite nicely. I think the more sessions that you have, your brain is in a different frame of mind.
Totally.
And it ends up coming out different.
I'm in the mode now where I've put too much paint on the canvas and I'm getting people to come sit in, like Luke, who's been helping massively, even you, Chief, and like listen to the song and be like, that's just not right. Just take it off. Oh, wow, that sounds heaps better. Okay, it's done.
Yeah.
Move on, you know? Yeah. Do you use anybody for mixing or mastering, or do you do that all yourself?
Alex Trumdisco.
Right.
He does all my like mixing, mastering and all that. The past couple of times when I finished a track, I've sent it to him and it's like a lot of this stuff is already kind of mixed and mastered. I think the way that I produce is because I'm chucking compressors and everything on.
Yeah.
He goes, there's not really like a lot he can do because like I'm kind of mastering the track as I go.
Is
the way that he put it. But I also like, I always still send it to him and get, kind of get his idea from it. He's a good friend of mine. So I guess I have that avenue where I can just go, let me know if you can make this sound better.
Yep.
And he will kind of give me an honest opinion and he'll be like, you've put too much on it for me to be able to do much. Or he'll be like, okay, there's an opening here where I can make it sound better.
I mean, every demo I've gotten of yours before, I've opened it up on SoundCloud and it's just the sausage.
Yeah.
The way. Yeah. And I'm like, so I see where he's coming from. It's like, this is loud.
It's hard. Fuck. Like, I just want to get it to that insane level though. And that's where it's just, you have to just chuck a lot of stuff. But I'm starting to learn a little bit more about that. And
Maybe the techie stuff, right? Is kind of bringing you back to like, oh, this doesn't have to.
I think I'm starting to learn that less sounds, but just make them sound better is the better way to go about it. When before it was just like, just chuck everything in here.
Fill it up with shit.
Sound good. Yeah. But I think, you just need room for everything to breathe. And I think he explained that, where it's just like, the more room you have to breathe, the more the speakers are going to bounce and the more it's going to have that, I guess, groove or vibe.
Mm.
When, if you've just stacked everything, then there's not as much room.
I think of it like a siphon, right? So you've got all, like, imagine you're trying to fill this, I'll explain with a cup. Trying to fill this cup and you've got a big funnel and you're pouring all your ingredients in, but there's only so much that can fit through the top here. So you have to be really hyper selective with what goes in as opposed to like, oh, nah, whatever drink I just poured in didn't it wasn't right. Let's just add more. It's like, nah, less is best.
Yeah.
But it took me the longest time to figure that out.
Yeah.
So simplicity, but the execution then is paramount.
Yeah.
And that's just experience, right? That just takes time. Where old mate Chief Street sitting next to me, he'll send me stuff to master. And it's just so like it's there. It's really like I'm pretty well just slamming a limiter on it, really.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot more that goes into it, but everything that needs to be heard is there. It's not like, you're not searching for stuff. You're not having to be like, oh, that bass frequency's clashing or it's like whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're really good at EQing.
I don't know. Just something about sample selection as well, I think.
Yeah.
You leave a lot of room in your mix. Stuff. It's super dynamic. So then like we do analog mastering here.
Yeah.
So then when we're running it through the analog gear, like it's got so much headroom.
Yeah.
And you can pump it and it's still the clarity there and it's got all the definition and everything's like warm and nice and it's just a joy. Yeah. Some people send me just
mud.
Yeah, it's mud and it's like, well, when
I just come in with just a one minus.
Yeah.
Well, a muddy mix.
It's a muddy mix and you're using like deduction.
And then they're like, can you please clean this up? It's like, I can't.
Nah, when you're trying to carve shit out of a mix, that's hard.
So. You get anyone else to like bounce your music off and that as you work on it? Or are you just the type of guy that just works on it yourself? Because like I've been that forever until I kind of started coming here more and being able to pass stuff to Luke and Nick and get external opinion.
I feel like I always like show my friends and kind of get their opinion on it. I guess the worst thing with showing your friends, if they're not producers, then I guess they can't kind of don't understand it on that dynamic kind of level.
Mm.
But I'd say Trump is one of those people that I do get feedback from. There's not really like much, like I guess like this is the whole thing going back to like with Adelaide is I do want to kind of find a circle where I do have people to bounce off of.
Dude, you have
and
that
I could
man.
Within a day just go, hey, can you check this out tonight?
Well,
I need feedback tonight because I'm in that frame of mind at that time.
Yeah.
And then if I don't get an answer back for like 2-3 days, which if I do go for feedback through someone in a state or overseas, it takes time. Like,
you miss the moment though. Like,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We had Godlands come in for a few weeks in a row just before she went on tour and stuff. And like, I think, you know, she was showing us heaps of stuff in the studio and we were giving her like feedback and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't need much advice. She's like queen. She's great. Mm. So, but yeah, I think it benefited her heaps to just have a set of ears.
She was even saying it was just nice to like, she doesn't live far away, just to come in and the atmosphere was different.
Yeah.
You know? And like, we would absolutely welcome you anytime.
Yeah.
And like,
Annabelle's killing it and she's cool.
She's like, so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a great podcast. I want to get it. She was our first guest, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, we might have had like Miles on before, but like first art, like first musical.
Yeah.
Yes. And she was a crack up.
So funny. Yeah. I definitely want to get her back. I did reach out. I said, come back for part two because she was on Instagram saying that she was walking to her venue and as she walked past the window, someone.
Yeah. They threw like bar water out of the window and it fucking got her right.
So stay tuned for that one. Yeah.
That's a low light. I mean, like pre-show too. Like
ways to piss off your artists that you've just booked is get them drenched in bar water. Yuck.
Yeah. That's gross. Yeah. Any bad stories?
Yeah. I was going to say.
From your tour life? Can you pick one at least?
I don't know. I don't know if there's any like there's super bad stories.
Well, Nick was given hell bad flight stories.
I've got shocking flight stories.
Yeah. I've definitely missed a flight, like where I've just woken up late after a big night or I just haven't gone to sleep.
One or the other. Slept too much and didn't sleep enough.
And just looked at the time and I was like, fuck. And made it to the airport, obviously like super late. But I don't think there's any like horror stories or anything like that.
You've had a privileged career. Oh, damn.
No, it's been all right. Like, I guess with touring and all that sort of stuff, like, like the shows have always been pretty sick.
Really?
And if they've been quiet, I've still just enjoyed it because I've met some cool people. And
maybe I'm just cursed.
You do live a funny life. I think a lot of strange stuff always seems to happen to you. Because like the amount of sessions I've had now, Luke's laughing because he just knows it's true.
What's the worst story?
Oh, dude, I'll pick one from him.
I don't know. Do you want the one where I flew like to India and they hadn't built the stage? Or like, do you want the one where I got trapped on a plane and the toilet exploded? Or like... I haven't even told that story yet.
Yeah.
Oh, the last story I told was about when I'd got on a flight back from LA to Brisbane. I think it was to play a show, but I was coming home and sat next to two drunk idiots. And I've already told this story on the podcast, but I woke up covered in their vomit.
Oh, fuck.
The hostie thought I'd vomited on myself. So they were just ignoring me hard. And I'm like, I need help.
Yeah.
So that sucked. But I've had plenty of shocking experiences, but I think every scenario has kind of taught me something about myself. Like at the time, you're like,
you're learning a lot, man.
Learning a lot. All right. Well, I'll give you a quick one. So this is probably the worst flight of my life. And to give some context, I've just done a few back-to-back shows in the States. And my current manager, his name was Evan. Do you remember Evan?
Yeah. Evan was cool.
Yep. So we were flying back to Australia only because the last show that I was meant to be playing at got cancelled due to, I think it was terrible weather or something.
Yeah.
In Seattle. So I wake up the next morning. We're gonna fly to LA and then we're gonna get on the next plane home. And Evan calls me and he's like, can't move. I'm like, what? He's like, come to my hotel room. I can't move. Anyway, I get to his hotel room. Poor bastard. He slipped in the shower. He's like, done a disc.
Oh, no shit.
And he's in like excruciating pain.
Yeah.
Anyway, we manage the poor bastard. We get him dressed. We get him into a car.
Yeah.
And he's like sitting in the car, like, poor thing. Every time we go over a bump, just like, his back is spasming hard. We get to LA. I haven't said anything to Evan, but it's actually my birthday.
Yeah.
And so at this time, I've got Evan as one of my managers, and then I've got two US managers, and one of them messages me like, hey, happy birthday. And I'm like, hey, this is the situation. Evan's pulled his back. We're at the airport. And they're like, when's your flight? Like, not for 8 hours. So we're just sitting at the airport.
Yeah.
He's lying flat. He's like, man, you go do stuff. You go do stuff. So long story short, I leave Evan on the floor at the airport, and I go catch up my other manager quickly. Get back to Evan. We get on the flight and this poor bastard, like he's taken as much painkillers as he possibly can. Plane takes off. It's this really strange smell. Now Evan, I think, is finally passed out, which is great. There's this really strange smell. It almost smells like hot metal.
Yeah.
It's like, that's weird. And anyway, thought nothing of it. Fall asleep. Wake up 4 hours into the flight. Pilot's like, ladies and gentlemen, it's the captain speaking. We just wanted to inform you that we have turned the plane around. We apologize for the inconvenience, but the toilets in the middle of the aircraft are not working. It's like, why are there hosties running up and down the aisles with towels? What's going on?
Yeah.
The smell's gotten worse by this stage. Anyway, Evan's like waking up, looking at me. I'm like, did you hear? They've turned the plane around. Some girl next to me starts crying. She's got like a funeral or something.
Yeah.
Or something
yeah.
really important to go to. And they're like, we're going to fly back to LA. Just go to fucking Hawaii or
go
something.
Go forward.
Like, yeah. Go forward, not backwards. So we've yeah. so we spend another 4 hours.
This is going back to where you started.
On a shitty plane. Yeah. Meanwhile, Evan's still spasming. Like his back is fine. Anyway, I feel for the dude. So this is like pretty well 8 hours of just, the plane smells like shit.
Yeah.
Got this chick next to me that's just mortified because she must have had something really important to go to.
Yeah.
We land at LA at like 3 or 4 in the morning. Customs isn't open, so you can't get off the plane. And you can't get your baggage. So we're on the tarmac.
Yeah.
Just sitting there for like 2 hours until they open the terminal. Then we get ushered in to the terminal. You can't come through, like border security, you can't come through. You've got to wait here until we've figured out transport to the nearest hotel. That took hours. Evan's still lying on his back.
Yeah.
In absolutely excruciating pain. And they didn't send us to the airport hotel. They sent us like a fucking hour away.
Yeah.
Spent 14 hours in a hotel. Went back to LAX. Evan's now like a little bit better, but still in a lot of pain. Got back on the same plane and flew the 14-hour leg back. Missed my birthday entirely.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't even say anything to Evan. I was like too proud to be like, hey, man, it's my birthday.
By the way.
And like poor bastard's limping. I get him to a car, whatever, with his luggage. Yeah. I'm like, I'll see you soon. Rest up. I just went home and I was like,
what the fuck?
Yeah. So just trying to unpack what the fuck just happened.
What the fuck was the last
happy
one?
Happy birthday, mate.
Yeah. So that was a
you never forget that.
Yeah. You know, like, whatever. But.
When you so were like, blase.
Is what it is.
When you were like, yeah, man, like touring and flights and shit. I'm like, yeah, been there.
Yeah.
Been there. Yeah.
I don't, yeah.
That's my worst flight.
I had a few delayed flights.
Like. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Flights. Oh, Luke's just tripped backstage because he thought it was so
funny. So what's the collateral? We got a broken watch. Whatever Luke's just broken. Yeah.
Well, there you go. I think you've been fairly unscathed. I reckon, mate, we need to get you back for part two. What do you reckon, Chief?
For sure, man. When he releases his next
party animal.
Yeah. See you in 8 years, mate.
Yeah. Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure to reconnect. I'm sorry it's been so long between drinks. I feel likewise. Like, I think there's something, I don't know what it is with Adelaide. I think obviously pandemics obviously like really killed it.
Yeah.
In a big way, but where like Chief and I and everybody here at the studio is making like a really proactive like effort to get artists together because they're, like, we'll talk about maybe another episode, like the headspace around all of this. Like it's hard.
Yeah.
And it's isolating and like you really do need to band together. And I think what the guys in Amsterdam and especially like LA and all that sort of stuff where like electronic music culture is like a massive thing. They all get around each other and there doesn't, there's like a bit of competition, but it's a healthy competition, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, there's always been this thing where there's people that bring up other people and then there's other people that just compete constantly.
Correct.
And I feel like, I don't know if it's just Australia or just Adelaide, but that happens a lot more here where that it's more competition rather than bringing everyone up with you.
Which is strange.
Which I think is the way that everyone should be. Like, I'm being successful. Why don't I just bring up all my friends 100%. At the same time?
How much more fun is that?
Yeah.
There's room for
let's
everyone
to succeed. Let's be at the top with everyone else, not just be at the top by myself. Like, I don't understand the logic.
Totally. Yeah. I think it's an insecurity and I think it's a scarcity mindset. I feel that maybe it is maybe a bit harder in Adelaide. So for those that have got ahead, they're a bit protective of that.
Yeah.
But I think that's, and I think it is right. I think it is a bit of an Australian thing, but we need to ditch that culture immediately.
Yeah.
It's definitely a collaborative effort and everybody needs a team. So even if it's just a team of support or if it's like a team of people that can help you get to the next level, you know, kind of need to park your ego a little bit.
Yeah.
But Seek, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure.
We've got
a couple of challenges that Chief Street and I are going to hold you accountable to. So number one, when we get you back, we're going to ask, how did it go with DJ Snake? Did he respond? Do you have a collaboration in the works, or are you going to release a song on whatever label? You know.
Yeah.
Yep.
The second one was Party Animal.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's way.
It can
more
be
important.
Party Animal or any other track.
Yeah.
Some.
Easy.
Awesome. All right. Thank you.
I mean, we all got to fucking do it, to be honest. Yeah. That's a challenge for everyone.
Hypocrite, right? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Exhibit A. awesome. Thanks for tuning in. If you've enjoyed the episode, please like and subscribe. Someone told me recently.
Yes. It's important to say. We always forget.
And stay tuned to the next episode. Last week, we spoke about this guy. He has half of water and he's wasted.
Gadbury.
we discussed something last week that I just wanted to mention quickly because I got some really good feedback. It was about a platform that didn't have metrics and stats. And we're going to share some news because a couple of people reached out. One who's actually developing an app, Chief, that doesn't have metrics and stats. Yeah. And the other one is more commonly known as Tidal. So
I was going to say, or some dude was like, it's called iTunes. Like Apple Music, fuck? That was the comment on TikTok. I was like, good one, bro. Also, it's kind of funny talking about that when Spotify Wrapped came out today. I'm like, it's all, and you posted your shit too.
It's the first time I've ever this posted my Spotify Wrapped. Yeah. And yet I am so anti-fucking metrics. So stay tuned to when Nick makes another mistake. All right.
So good. Yeah. Ciao.